Welcome again to Cardiff's Talk Extra Time. I'm Russ Goldman, the co-host, and with me today will be Yanis Janaeus. In this episode, we'll be looking back at the 2-2 draw for Fulham on Saturday against Brentford at Craven Cottage. We have much to get through, and while I wait for my Cardiff's Talk co-host to join me, I just want to share quickly my thoughts on the match. I had the pleasure of watching it back this morning, and yes, I'm going to say pleasure of watching back because I do like watching back all of these matches, so thank you to Fulham for releasing it early so I could watch it before we did this show, and Yanis and I both have watched it. Also want to mention a big shout-out to Gentleman Jim, who unfortunately was losing his voice during this match, but was in rare form. So, again, this was an interesting result. I think it's a fair result, but we have much to get through to really talk about. There are so many different things we could talk about in this next hour. I look forward to doing it with my co-host. I'm going to bring him on the line right now. Yanis, how you doing, my friend?
Hello!
How are things up in Canada? Is it warm up there? It's warm down here.
Yeah, it is. It's 7 degrees today. It's supposed to be 14 degrees tomorrow and rainy. It's supposed to get a bit cooler towards the end of the week, but we've had no snow here yet. So it's been unseasonably mild here in southern Ontario, which is good. And it looks like we're not going to have a white Christmas. And as long as we can keep the snow away, I'll be happy.
I'm there with you. We got so much snow last year. I'm certainly not looking forward to that this year where I live. So I hope we both don't get much snow. That'd be great, Yanis.
Oh, for sure. For bloody sure.
All right, let's get into this. I will share my thoughts while we go through it. I'll start, but I want you to start, because what's interesting about this is I'm glad that I got a chance to watch it. I listened to it, yeah. You know, and heard the Gentleman Jim broadcast, which was phenomenal. I always love listening to Gentleman Jim. But watching it back, I felt a little bit different after watching it back than I did listening to it. Sometimes I feel the same, but I got a good amount out of it. Just share with me your overall thoughts on the match, Yanis.
Well, it was a good game. You know, it's been a strange week with the appointment of Stuart Gray, you know, the caretaker, head coach, whatever the hell he is. And then obviously a lot of uncertainty. And, of course, the big thing is he talked about in his interview on Friday with Sarah Brooks was the bragging rights, which may not have been the right approach. To me, it's just get 3 points. It doesn't matter if you're playing Dog City United. Just get the 3 points at home.
That's right.
Then I looked at the lineup. It was okay. I mean, you know that I'm a Jazz Richards boo boy anyway, so you know, I had a good grumble at that. Would have liked a 3-4-3. We concede a penalty, which is questionable, but it was given.
Yep.
We have a good laugh when Tarkowski gets the equaliser with an own goal. I swear I thought Gentleman Jim was going to have a heart attack. And then second half, lovely goal by Dembele. And really, McCormack made that up. It was a lovely flick on and nice little run. And then yet again, we concede a goal from a set piece as soft as a blancmange. And I think what typified that was the fact that as soon as the goal went in, if you looked at Stearman on the far post,
yes, he went nuts.
He kicked the far post and he started shaking it. And that's the sense of frustration. The good thing is that we did keep attacking until the end. Stuart Gray was as good as his word. He said, look, we're going to try and be aggressive about it. But the negative for me is we're winless in 6 games. Our last victory was at the end of October against Bristol City. We've got Ipswich Town coming in to the Cottage on Tuesday night, and that's going to be a difficult game. And we really need to start converting draws into results. I tell you what, Gray's got a lot of organising to do, and he's going to have to do a little bit more work on the training field, but I think he's also going to have to look at the personnel. He may have to make one or two very difficult decisions about the lineup that may not please all the fans, but I think in terms of moving forward, it will benefit the team if we're going to get some results.
See, I'm glad that you brought that up, and I definitely want to talk about that as we go through the show, Yanis, especially when we talk about the starting 11.
Yeah.
I think there are some tough decisions to be made. You were talking about the formation. I would have loved to have seen him gone with three in the back, because I think that plays to our strengths. And when we talk about this match, and I watched it, and I'm thinking, we still see the same issues that I've seen before. Some players playing out of position. And yeah. I understand this theory of getting your best 11 players, your most talented 11 players. But I'm going to be talking about this on the preview show. Shouldn't you get your best players on the pitch to play their best positions, Giannis? And while we go through this, and I want your thoughts on the starting 11, a couple things that stood out for me. I'll start, we're just transitioning to talking about this. I don't like Tom Kearney wide. I just don't like him wide. I don't think it suits his abilities to the fullest. I think he should be playing a central role. So you have that. Again, I'm looking at the Jazz Richards and Ryan Frederick situation. I'm with you. I go back and forth on Jazz Richards, but again, is Ryan Fredericks better suited for the midfield, or is he a right back? You've got a decision you've got to make on that. And then also one that I've been thinking about a great deal, Tim Ream. Tim Ream is a center back, but again, or is he a left back, or can he just do both? What is his best position? So that's why I think the formation change of three in the back best suits him. But maybe in the future, we should be thinking of him potentially being a left back instead of a center back. Again, just different things I'm thinking about as we're going through the starting 11. Stuart Gray's first match in charge, Giannis, and I'm looking at the starting 11, and I'm thinking, it seems safe, but it just didn't seem like the right formation, that's just my opinion, and the right starting 11.
Yeah, you're right. It's same old, same old. It's same old, same old. You've got to, and I absolutely agree, you've got to put your best players in the best positions. And remember, we're playing at home. So let's not defend to the hilt here. Let's put together an attacking lineup that you think is going to ask questions early on. Try and attack with some intent. And we've got enough good attacking players that can do that. Starting off, one thing that a few of us can argue about has been the quality of our keeping this year. There have been a few glitches. But Lewis Lonergan and Bettinelli have done a fantastic job. Lonergan was worth his weight in gold yesterday. He had a fantastic game. But you've got to, you know, and I scratch my head, there's a couple of selections. I could go on all year about Jazz Richards. I could write a biography on this guy. I don't get it. I don't know why he's there. I don't know why he's there. And one of the reasons I don't know why he's there is his decision making. He might have been a bit unlucky on that penalty. You know, some refs would have given it, some would. But you're not making a challenge like on the edge of the box, and decision making seems to be where our Achilles' heel. And it's led to a team, let's face it, has the second worst defensive record in the division. It's all well and good saying we've got the talent. I don't think there's any question we do. But if you're conceding as many goals as we are, we're not going anywhere fast. We're going to have to beat teams 5-3 and 6-4. So you've got to look at defensively how it's going to look. You've got to look at your midfield unit and whether if you play a 3-4-3 defensively, we're good enough to track back. And the one question mark I would have right now with the four you had yesterday is the mobility to play that. Maybe that's why he went to 4-4-2. I'm not sure. But Garber came into the line. I don't have a problem. I actually like Garber. But
I thought he played well.
But in 3-4-3, he's not in the starting lineup. So, I mean, Gray's got he's got to work this out. But I'm hoping to God he eradicates this club loving with Jazz Richards. I mean, that's the first thing you've got to look at. And I think you've got to relook at the central midfield. Play your strongest players. We're not away from home playing against, Chelsea or whatever. We're at home in a local derby against a team that we only beat last year in the League Cup 1-0. So we want to get a good result, but we want to have an attacking formation that's going to reflect that. And it wasn't until they really equalised at 2-2 did we decide we're going to go for it. And at one point, of course, we had four strikers up front, which I thought was brilliant. You know, I thought that was
great, Giannis.
It's great.
And I definitely want to talk about that when we go through the second half. I want to get your thoughts on that because I thought that Stuart Gray went for it. Like you said, he was aggressive, and I actually liked that approach. I wasn't expecting that. He was very aggressive at the end. But I want to get back talking about the central midfield pairing because, listen, I like Scott Parker. Scott Parker, to me, is a true leader. And I asked this on the preview show. My concern is playing him along with Jamie O'Hara. Does it work? Were you concerned when you saw the two of them playing together, or did you think that would work?
No, I was too. A couple of weeks ago, I had to give away my trusty Hyundai Elantra. and it's, you know, close to 300,000 on the clock. You know, the bumper was hanging off, the fuel line and oil line was leaking. We had, you know, it smashed at the front. And as the tow truck driver took it away, I felt sad. I felt sorry because, you know, the cars had a really long innings, some great trips, ever faithful. But there gets a point where it starts to get long in the tooth and you realize that its shelf life is done. Parker's 35 years of age. He's been a loyal servant to a number of clubs. He's been an excellent player, England international. He deserves all the plaudits he gets. But you can see that the game seems to have left him a little bit by. This last injury sort of taken away some of the mobility. Now, he's a player you can bring off the bench in the last 30 minutes to maybe add a little bit of energy or provide some stability. But to start the lineup, no. I think O'Hara and Parker are a little bit too samey. You've got someone like Kearney out wide on the left, and you've got the opportunity to start him in the middle with O'Hara, and now you've got some more mobility. And Kearney's got this knack of making these nice runs. And I think this is where I suppose Gray's going to have to make difficult decisions. You've got a club captain, you know, who we all love. But the fact of the matter is that there comes a time when you've got to, you know, love somebody, set them free. And he's got to make a difficult decision. And I think for the Ipswich game on Tuesday, I will hope and I'd be tempted to put Kearney in the middle with O'Hara and sit Park on the bench and maybe, you know, give Kaká a chance to come back in. And then maybe look at flipping the Richards-Fredericks combination, sending Jazz Richards on a car to the M2 down to Dover and maybe to a cliff somewhere so we don't have to see him again. We've got players on the bench that can always come in and do a job. But I think back to the Parker thing, I think it might be time for him to make way, though he is the club captain.
Right, right. Listen, you're really nailing it, Giannis, because I was thinking about this before the match, and then I saw the starting 11, and I'm thinking the two of them together. And you brought up at the beginning of the show, tough decisions. Stuart Gray has several tough decisions, and he's going to have to make them. You know, as long as he's in charge, he's going to have to assess this match, look back at this match, analyze it, and say what worked, what didn't work. You know, he did make substitutions that I think were effective, but again, it was aggressive. It's probably not something that you're going to see on a regular basis and not something that I feel comfortable with being that aggressive, obviously. But that did work. But I'm just talking about bringing in the players. You mentioned Kaká. Kaká was effective. So maybe you need to assess him moving forward. You know, you have to assess the players that came in and were they able to do a job? Were other players not able to do a job? And then look at the team you're playing, Ipswich Town, and find the best starting 11 to match up against that team. It's going to be a tough game, like you said. And I give Stuart Gray, you know, I want to cut him some slack. This is his first match in charge, and I hope he learns from it. And we'll see if he can, because, again, I agree with you. I think there are some tough decisions to make. It's decision-making right now that it's a difference between winning and losing in all levels. We're talking on the pitch, coaching, decision-making. Making the right decisions can be the difference between a loss, a draw, and a victory. And you know what? So far, so good with Stuart Gray. And this is his first match. I want to give him a chance. Let's see what he does in the second match. All right. Sure. All right, Giannis, let's move on. Let's now go through some key moments. Let's start in the first half. I have to go right to the call for the penalty. Let's go to the 18th minute. And let's talk about this because I've watched this. I can't tell you how many times I've watched it. I've seen screenshots of it. And, you know, again, Brentford wins the penalty on a challenge by, like you mentioned, Jazz Richards. And Alan Judge scores on the penalty. So I'm going to ask you, again, I've watched this many times. First of all, was it a penalty? Should it have been called?
I don't think it was, but I'm not surprised it was given. I think it was one of those 50-50s. It was so close to the line. I think, Judge, he took the penalty well, but I think the bigger issue is why you're making a challenge like that so close to the edge of the box. You were really right. Asking for trouble. You know, we could... We'd sound like Jose Mourinho if we started moaning about... You know, the refereeing has been questionable, you know, the 2 years we've been in the championship. Gentleman Jim was really quick to jump all over it. But remember the speed of the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a split-second decision. I think if you put my head in the chopping block, I would say that wasn't a penalty. But I'm not surprised he gave it. I really, in many ways, I can't complain, because it was so close, it was done so quickly. And the fact is, let's go back to the defensive principle. Why was he making that challenge in the first place? He's
sure.
got to have known. This is a Welsh international. I'm going to have a good laugh in the European Championships in June, because whoever plays against Jazz on that side for England, when we play them, I think it's second game, is going to have a laugh. Because this is a full international who's going to be playing Euro 2016. I'm not going to have a go at the ref for this one. I think it was really close. I'm usually pretty quick to have a go at the refs, but my biggest question mark is, why was he making that challenge at that particular time? And the penalty was very well taken. There's nothing Lonergan could have done about it. But it's stuff like that. It's decision making. It's mental errors,
yes.
Russ. This is what's
yes,
doing
it. Yes, mental errors.
It's stupid stuff. And you've got some youngsters in this team, youngsters on the bench. You've got a very experienced international player who should know better. Hold him, take him outside, and he's just stuck the boot in, hoping. Yeah, he did get a bit of the ball. He did, and he could feel a little bit aggrieved, but look at where it was, and look at the way the player went over, and he didn't dive. It was a challenge, and he's given it, and no amount of moaning was going to change that. So, head on the block, I'd say it wasn't a penalty, but I'm not surprised it was given.
See, you analyze this exactly the way that I'm thinking. I don't think it was a penalty, but like you said, it's 50-50. I've seen it called. Again,
yeah.
I've seen this called. So I understand, like you said, in the split-second decision, the ref makes it. But again, I've thought about this. This is just my philosophy. I don't want to kill the ref because, again, the speed of the match, I understand why this was given, because I've seen it before, and it's a difficult decision. My only thought, Giannis, again, with officials in general, if you're not 100% sure, if this is one on the edge, I don't know if I would give it. That's just me. That's just my philosophy. I think you have to be 100% sure. The fact that we're saying it's 50-50 tells me that maybe the ref should be really thinking about that in the future. You should be 100% sure when you're going to change the game like that it's a penalty. That's my only thought on the ref. I understand why it was given. But for me, I want a ref to be 100% sure. I don't know if you could be 100% sure on that.
Yeah, and there's an interesting sidebar to this as well, Russ, because if you look at other major, leagues, things like instant replay, where, you and I both know in the NFL the head coach has the option, or the manager has the option, to throw the red flag on the field. If
right.
they think that the decision that's been made is questionable, then you've got a chance of, replay to get it's not about whether the call you agree or disagree with the call. You want to get the call right.
You want to get it right.
You want to get it right. And I think that in the long term, I think that's something that they wouldn't do in the Premier League, but I think in the lower divisions, I think the scope, the same way as they introduced the two referee, two linesmen on the side of the goals in the Europa League. I think there's scope to do that. And I think whether we're Fulham fans or not, at the end of the day, we want the decision to be right. Case in point, the World Cup England against Germany, the Lampard goal, which was a goal, but wasn't given. And I think if you get the call right, I don't think fans will disagree with. I mean, we're going to have human error, but because there is human error, let's take that away, and let's give the opportunity for fans can't moan and say, well, that's terrible, it was called. No, if they get the right call, everybody will agree. I think it was certainly one of those, but I don't know when that could come in. But I think with the pressure of social media and modern media, there's going to be greater pressure, I think, on ensuring you don't have those questionable calls that are going to change the outcome of really, really big games. This could have been the playoff game at Wembley Stadium, where they go a goal up from a penalty that's questionable. In front of 80,000 fans, you want to make sure the call is right. So that's something I think... down the line, we certainly need to look at. But at the end of the day, he's given it. What are you going to do? It was well taken, and we had to come back. We had to come back from a goal down.
Yeah, you know what? Very good discussion here, Giannis. Because first of all, I'm glad that you've put the focus on the Fulham player, because the Fulham player needs to do better there. Again, he shouldn't put his team in that situation. That's what we're talking. We're talking about decision making. And again, on your discussion on the refs, listen, I'm there with you. Of course, I'm there with you. I watch the NFL. I would like that someday, but again, that's something that we could discuss for another show. But again, it goes back to our conversation that you just mentioned about getting it right. There was a situation 2 years ago. Goal line technology first affected a Fulham match, and the goal went against Fulham. It actually went in for, I believe, West Brom, if I remember correctly. It was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And I was angry. But part of me was, well, you know what? Goal line technology worked. They got it right. Even though it went against my team, the technology worked. And I think the game is better for it. I'm not saying that we need goal line technology in the championship. I'm just talking about my personal philosophy is I just want the calls to be right. When it's 50-50, I think the percentage has to be 100% on something like that. And I can't see that as a 100% decision one way or another. I think you go the other way and you don't call it unless you're 100% sure. So unless that ref is 100% sure, I guess he must have thought that way because he called it. Anyways, enough talking and complaining about the refs, because I don't want to do that, because I'm glad that you brought it back to the Fulham player, because that's where it really needs to be, about the Fulham player and the decision-making at the time. All right, Giannis, let's now move ahead, because Fulham do get the equalizer. And, yes, I guess you could say, you know, tit for tat, you know, again, own goal by James Tarkowski makes it 1-1. And, again, it was a great delivery, great cross by Ross McCormick. It was a poor corner, but he made up for it on the cross. So, again, we're at 1-1. Do you feel justified at that point?
And I'm not so sure justified to be right. I thought, okay, well, if they caught the break with the penalty, we caught the break with the own goal. And Tarkowski is going to look back on that, and that's poor defending. I mean, it's and he's a good little player, but I'm not sure what he's. It didn't look like there was a goal. Button didn't look like he'd made a call, and he's just come and he's flicked it. It's a lovely goal if you're attacking a set piece, but it's rotten defending if you're defending it. It was an element of luck that we probably needed at the right time, because if we go into halftime at 1-0 down, you know, our heads are down. I mean, Stuart Gray admitted that on Monday morning when the lads went in after last week, the heads were obviously down, and you know, they once they got into work, it was once they started working, it improved. But every game that you don't win adds the pressure on, and you know, you start questioning your own self-confidence and your own confidence in your teammates and often in your coaches as well. So the goal that Tarkowski scored came at the right time, and it was good. It was and it got the crowd really into it. And there's one thing, I thought both sets of supporters were excellent yesterday. It was a very, very good atmosphere, as you'd expect for a local derby. But if anything, it sounded louder than when we beat QPR, which was good. And, you know, the old bragging, the bragging rights to me thing is bollocks in many ways, because what's the point of going 1-37 if the only team you beat is Brentford? I'd rather have a much better record than, I mean, if you lose, you lose. I mean, it's
right.
It doesn't matter whether it's, you know, the ha-has or whoever it's going to be. But when that goal went in, all of a sudden it was all hell for leather, which was great. And it made for a very entertaining game. And it was the break that we needed. And a lot of us could say, well, maybe it's the break we deserve. We've not had that many this year. But I also happen to think we make our own luck. And some of our defending has been lamentable at best. So it got us back in the game, and that was the main thing.
Okay, very good. You know, and I'm glad that you twisted a little bit to talk more about luck than again, justify. Yeah. Because, again, it's a good way to look at it. All right, Giannis, we go in the half at 1-1 and brand new. Obviously, match going into the second half. We're even here. We're equal at 1-1. But what's interesting, to start the second half, unfortunately for Fulham fans, Brentford actually came out pretty bright, and they were taking it to Fulham for the good 5 or 6 minutes, which was unfortunate. Yep. But you got to give Brentford credit. They came out, and they looked like the better side early on in the second half. Yep. However, Fulham take the lead in the 64th minute. You've already talked about this. A great goal by Musa. Explain this goal to the Fulham supporters.
Well, ball's come on the left, and McCormack's gone on a nice run. He's been aggressive, and Dembele's made a lovely run inside to his right, and he's knocked it forward, and the timing of the run was perfect, and he slotted it past Button. It was a lovely goal, and it's sort of symptomatic of the synergy between the two. It was well worked, And it shows how we can cut teams up with our pace and our skill. And I think it was probably deserved because early on in that second half, I thought Brentford played very well. They're a good side. And I think they've done a very good job picking up Dean Smith as the new manager. They've got players there and a setup that are more than capable of getting to the top six. This might upset a lot of Fulham fans, but I think it's the way it is. They've got players that are influential, that cause problems. Vibe can be destructive. Canos on the right-hand side is a quality player. I like O'Connell and Tarkowski at the back. Button's a very solid keeper. Kalschbaumer on his day is devastating. And Yanaris at right back caused us all sorts of problems on our left-hand side. So they're a good side. And we needed to hold it firm for that first 10 minutes. It was a wonderful goal to watch. And it was nicely set up. And Dembele's confidence has gone, you know, it's certainly got a lot higher. We've got goals in this team. We know that. It's rare that we're going to go goalless through 90 minutes. It just becomes a bit frustrating when you set up a goal as good as that. You take the lead. You've got the impetus and you've got the momentum with you, and then we let it slip again. And that's the thing I think that Stuart Gray will have told him in his change of look. Pretty good performance, but man, oh man, we can't be doing this. Every single bloody game we've got going on Monday morning and look at the tape and go, how the hell have we conceded yet another goal from a set piece? It's laughable. It's a comedy. And he'll have been, he wouldn't have said it in the press match conference after, but I would be surprised if he wasn't really pissed off that we had good passages of play, we create some good chances, our keeper had had an outstanding game that had kept us in the game, and then we let in a lollipop of a goal, a really silly goal that cost us 2 points. There have been too many of them this year, there were too many of them last year, so I'm sure that when they get back on the field tomorrow, maybe they went back on the field today. But if they get back in the field tomorrow, the first thing he's going to go on is, we've got to sort this nonsense out because we're as good as most teams in this division. But if we can't defend properly, we're not going to get anywhere. And it's an 11, it's 11 v 11 commitment, so 11 defenders, 11 attackers.
That's right.
You've got to get this right. You attack and defend in numbers. And, you can, Lonergan, I mean, what's Lonergan supposed to do? And as I said, our keeping's been solid this year. So, we took the lead and then, excellent. And then, of course, then we let it slip. So, more frustration again.
No, listen, I hear you. And it's funny because you're talking about the players on Brentford. And, listen, we have to give them credit. They play together. I think the big difference for me between the two teams right now, I think Fulham are a very talented team, a more talented team than Brentford. I think at this point in the development of Fulham is that Brentford's team plays as a team. They have that synergy. Everyone knows each other's moves. They know how to play together. I think Fulham are still figuring out who they are, Giannis. And I think what we're seeing is that synergy hasn't come together yet, and you are seeing the mental errors. What you saw only 6 or 7 minutes later was mental errors. That should not be happening. They need to fix that. Everyone needs to be accountable for that situation. Like you mentioned, it's not one person. You attack as 11, but you defend as 11. Everyone has to look themselves in the mirror and say, what happened on that? How can we fix it? And then, once and for all, fix it. Fix the problems. I know you're working on it, but there has to be, you have to get over these mental errors, because these are mental errors. They should not be giving up all these set pieces, goals from them. They just shouldn't be. They're professionals, and they need to figure out what's going on, analyze the problem, and just fix it, because it's mind-numbing that only 6 minutes later they give this up. It's frustrating as hell. Anyways, let's move on.
The other thing as well, Russ, as fans, we've been talking about this for the last year or so, but I think that at some point now, looking at these goals, someone like Stuart, whoever the hell's doing the transfers, if we're conceding as many goals from set pieces, soft goals, there comes a point when the pressure's got to come from the coach and you've got to look at the players, but then do we have the right players? Because if we're making the same mistakes, I'll do it from a coach's perspective. If a team is making the same mistakes game in, game out, conceding the same opportunities and the same goals, is that reflective of your coaching? Well, you could argue that, but then it could also be reflective of the players. And to that end, the link becomes coachability. Are the players coachable? Are they listening? Because if we're making these mistakes game in, game out. Maybe we've got players that we really aren't, that really aren't coachable and really shouldn't be there. And we, and for us to go, you know, take the next step, Leicester City have done an incredible job this year. If you look at them, they're a functional team that knows what everybody else is doing. Pearson did a great job starting that off. Claudio Ranieri's done an astonishing job this year. But if you notice, he's got balance all over the park where everybody knows what they're doing and there's a responsibility factor. You got players that know their jobs, but players that go all out to do it. And if you got the players making these mistakes, I mean, that equalising goal was a horror story yesterday. Then you know what? Who was marking him? Who was marking the flick on and then the final header? If these players can't do the job, we can't have them at this club because we're going to have the same mistakes game in, game out. We're 7 points off the bottom three. And it doesn't matter how many goals we score. If we're conceding like this, we have to look at the personnel. And I think it's the coachability thing that Stuart Gray right now is going to have to say, okay, there are players here that aren't going to get any better. They're not improving because they're not absorbing and they're not coachable. Therefore, we don't want them. And I think that's something that he's going to have to do. The club's going to have to take a look at if we have any aspirations of moving up the table.
Listen, that's actually a very interesting take there, Giannis, because while you're saying it, I'm thinking about the players on the pitch and also think about other sports. It's the same thing with any sport. If someone's not reaching their ability, is it on them? Is it really about the player? Meaning that, yeah, he's a talented player, but is he not coachable? Is he not taking the coaching? Is he not learning from his mistakes? And if that's what's going on, if Stuart Gray is assessing that, then one, that person should not be starting. Two, should not be playing. Because, again, you need to find someone that can do the job. If you have watched back and analyzed these matches, I'm talking about if I'm Stuart Gray and the coaching staff, and I realize, you know what, we have a weak link here. We need to get rid of the weak link because no matter what we say, he keeps making the same mistakes. I agree with you, Giannis. They need to look at everything. They need to look at the problem. Here I am saying fix it, but maybe you're right. Maybe part of that has to do with a player on the pitch. Maybe there is a player or two out there that's not coachable. I don't know that. That's something for Stuart Gray to assess and the club to assess because we need the best players that can do a job at every position. And again, I'm glad that you brought up Leicester City. I just mentioned Brentford. I just want players out there, Giannis, that can do a job at every position and to fit their skill set at the position that they're at. And if someone's not doing it, I agree with you. Get him out of there. We don't need him there. If he can't take coaching, get him out of there. I'm on board with you on that. I think we have a talented side. But if there are a couple players there that aren't living up to their expectations and they're not getting better, then we need to look at them and analyze them and think maybe it's time to move on from that player. So very good point, but I like where this discussion's going. All right, Giannis, so let's move on. And let's just talk about the end of the match because the last 10 minutes, Fulham were really in the ascendancy. We had more than a few chances to score here. There were two opportunities by Kaká when he came on with Colley Woodrow, and there was a great opportunity by Moussa Dembélé, but again, just could not figure out a way to win. While we wrap up just going through the key moments, I just want an overall assessment of those last 10 to 12 minutes from you, and also I want to know what you thought about the substitutions because I want to really dive into that as well because these substitutions – really changed how Fulham played in that, at the end of that match. We're talking about Woodrow coming on, Kaká coming on, and then a little bit later, Matt Smith comes on.
I was delighted. Kaká, to me, should have started. I'd have taken Richards and sent him on the boat to China and then started Fredericks at right back and put Kaká in front of him. Matt Smith has been destructive when he comes on. He's a big, strong lad, very, very good in the air. And he scored goals. Colley Woodrow, I'm a big fan of, as you know. And he's a young lad who I want to see get more time. But I think the big thing to come out of this was the fact that Stuart Gray went, bollocks, we're going to go for this. And I think had we lost yesterday, I'd have felt the same as the way I do today. Because I'm going to applaud Gray. for the fact that he didn't play conservative. He said, okay, let's go for this. We're at home. It's a local derby. You know, no guts, no glory. And it was attacking, and we created chances. And it was good to see. And I hope I'm going to get the sense that Fulham fans will have left the game yesterday and said, well, you know what? We've played pretty well. Played pretty well. We've attacked. We've had a go. We've had a real go. And it's been a while since we've seen our team do that. And maybe that's going to bode well, because we have the attacking intent to cause problems and score goals. We can beat most teams in this division. And he wasn't defensive about it. And I certainly don't have a problem with that. So I was delighted when the three came on. You know what? The only question mark for me might have been actually bringing Kearney off. But, I mean, so be it. And the other thing, of course, let's not forget as fans just looking back at the Park O'Hara thing and even the subbings, it shows us how massively we miss Ryan Tunnicliffe. He's such a huge cog to this team. I mean, he had surgery, I think it was on Thursday. He's going to be out another 10 weeks on his hamstring injury, and that is a huge, huge loss. He was playing so well, and in some ways he's not replaceable. So the other thing, of course, you've got to look at is that I think his injury has upset the balance of this team. But I like the fact that Gray said, okay, let's bring Cochrane, Smith and Woodrow on, and let's go at them, and see if we can create something, and let's see if we can get some glory out of it. So I'm certainly pleased with that approach.
So am I, Yanis, and it's funny because I've seen a little bit on social media some fans concerned, I guess at the time, that we were going to be exposed to the counter, and certainly understand that, because again you were really going for it. You were really attacking them, and that does leave you open. But yeah. I appreciate the approach, though. I appreciate the fact. Listen, we're struggling. He's going for broke. He's going for it, and I like the approach. And so I was all for all of these moves, and maybe bring on Smith a little bit earlier, to influence the game. Okay, I can make an argument there, but the first two decisions, I'm thinking, man, he is really just going for this, and I have to applaud him for that, because I was not expecting those types of substitutions to that extent to change the balance, to basically say, hey, we are going for all 3 points. If we lose it, so be it. We're going for it. And that, to me, showed me a positive sign on Stuart Gray. The type of person he is, because I was expecting him to be all this defensive, because that's what I've heard. He's, a safe pair of hands. He's very defensive. We saw the other side, and I like the other side. We saw the balance, because he, as he has said, Yanis, we defend as 11. He wants them to defend as a unit, but we attack as 11. And he gave you some attack without 11. Again, he really went all out there, and he was aggressive. And again, it's been a long time since I've seen someone go that aggressive. So I actually appreciate it, even though, again, we did not get the winning goal. At least he tried, and that's the way I look at it. Yeah, at least he tried.
But
getting back to your point on Tunnicliffe. And I think this is getting a little bit overlooked. I think he's a loss. I think he's a big loss. And I think his impact has been underrated this year. I think he's been really good. And I think we're feeling, the loss of him. And they're going to have to find a way to move on without him. They're going to have to find another way. And sometimes you have to play a little bit differently. But I think we're learning how much of an impact Ryan Tunnicliffe had and how well he worked with Jamie O'Hara. Because I think the two of them worked really well together, and I think it's going to take a little bit to overcome that. All right, Yanis, let's move on. Let's now talk about stats. The stats are interesting in this match because they're extremely even. So, again, that might be why we have a 2-2 draw. So I'm just going to go through it, and you tell me what stands out to you. All right, possession. Fulham had 51.8% to Brentford having 48.2%. Total shots. Fulham only had 8. Brentford had 14. On target, Fulham had 3. Brentford had 6 on target. Passing accuracy, Fulham were at 74%. Brentford were at 73%. Brentford had 10 key passes to only 6 to Fulham, so they beat us there. Total passes, Fulham beat Brentford there, 447 to 423. Attacking passes, 311 to 288. Crosses, Fulham basically almost doubled them, 29 to 14 there. Crossing accuracy, Fulham edged it at 24 to 21%. Duels won, Fulham were way behind here. We only had 34, and Brentford had 51. Aerial duels won. This one was a little bit surprising. Fulham only had 13. Brentford had 18. Clearances, Fulham had 22. Brentford had 23. Interceptions, Fulham had 15. Brentford had 13. Interceptions inside the box, Fulham had 3, and Brentford had 2. Okay, my friend, what stands out to you from the stats?
Well, the aerial duels one is telling.
Yes.
Conceding the second goal. Only having 3 shots on target is a little bit of a concern. But we did have 10 corners, which is good. I'd like to see us... We've got some big boys there, and I'd like to see us do a little bit better from corner kicks. We don't score many, and I'd like to see us improve that. But if you look overall, it was a very... You know, the 2-2 result was indicative of the balance of play. It was a fairly even game. It was lots of ebb and flow. Brentford had their moments. We had our moments. And it's funny, looking back on that recent penalty, that if you look at the replay of the Jota goal that was called offside for Brentford, where Gentleman Jim had a laugh, I've looked at that replay. And I think it was very tight. I think Jota might have been onside for that. So it's funny how things work out. I noticed that Dean Smith didn't say anything in the press conference afterwards about saying, well, Jota's goal should have been given, which I think is good management. But at the end of the day, I think a 2-2 result was good. I'd like to see us take more shots, especially at home. I think that's a little bit of a concern. You know, we're supposed to impose ourselves. Remember, Kit called it, he wanted to make it a fortress. And you and I both remember when it was a fortress. You know, in the Premier League, teams hated coming to our ground, our little ground, you know, which was very narrow. But we need to get back to that. I'm hoping that Stuart Gray's positivity in terms of, you know, changing formation and personnel near the end of the game is going to rub off on the players and give them confidence. Because the one thing it does as well is it shows that the coach has faith in his players. A, it shows an ability to change things in midstream. And B, say, you know what, I have the faith in you that if I open things up, I know you're going to make things happen. And you know, for all the cockiness and arrogance you sometimes get from, you know, overplayed players and millionaires and what have you, they're still humans and they still feed off confidence. And sometimes something as small as saying, okay, we're going to play with 4 strikers can reverberate around the squad in a positive way. So I think that was psychologically, I thought that was a very good move. And I'm hoping that's going to carry over to the Ipswich Town game, which, you know, they've just won up at the MK Dons. And that was a good result. But I think we match up pretty well with Ipswich. I think it's going to be a good game. But I think if we can, you know, a couple of days on the training field, I think I wouldn't be surprised if they actually trained today just to sort out the set piece nonsense. Hopefully things will be a little bit tighter on Tuesday night.
Okay, very good there, Yanis. Very good. And I'm glad that you mentioned the goal that obviously did not count. And I wrote that down. I forgot to mention that because I've watched it a few times. And you know what? You know, I don't know. Did we get lucky there? Did we get fortunate? Because, you know, calls work each way here. But it wasn't called. Thankfully for Fulham, they would have lost the match. But, you know, I'm sorry. The offside was called, so... So I'll take that because again, you know, it's called, we actually lose the match. So no, good for you for mentioning that. I actually forgot to mention, so I'm glad that you did. All right, Yanis. Let's now go to rating the players. Well, I thought I would do a little bit differently today, because I definitely want you to rate the players. I'm gonna read you the ratings from Andrew Rayburn from West London Sport. I'm just gonna share his ratings. I did this in the last show because I think it's interesting, someone else's perspective, a journalist's perspective. He has a little blurb on each player, and then I will let you have at it. Sound good?
Yep, sounds great.
Okay. All right. Again, this is from West London Sport, Andrew Rayburn. Again, he does his ratings. He did both Brentford and Fulham, but I'm just gonna obviously focus on Fulham. Let's start with Andy Lonergan. He gave him an 8. Returned to the side for the first time in 6 weeks and did not look rusty. Let's move to Ashley Richards. He gave him a 6. another returning from injury, but unlike Lonergan, his lack of game time was evident in the slightly rash diving challenge that resulted in the penalty. Decision looked harsh, though, as he seemed to get a touch on the ball. Richard Stearman, he gave a 7-2. Booked early in the second half after coming together with Jack O'Connell out of corner. Strong defensively, but his most eye-catching moment was a lunge busting run deep into the Brentford half. This is actually a great run. Sadly, it proved fruitless and left him struggling to get back. Tim Ream, he gave a 6. Looked uncomfortable at times and was lucky to get away with a loose pass in the first half. That was a terrible pass by Ream, by the way, which led to a V-Bay shot saved by keeper Lonergan. Luke Garbutt, he gives an 8. Has been frustrated at his lack of first-team football, but took full advantage of James Husband's absence to put in a fine display at left back. His passing was tidy, and he closed off Brentford's right-hand side. Okay, let's move on to Ryan Fredericks, who we gave a 7-2. Worked hard, supporting Richards as Brentford tried to overload down the left. One flying block to deny Jake Bidwell was particularly impressive, but made little impact going forward. Booked in the first half and was replaced by Alex Kakaniklic on 79 minutes. Jamie O'Hara gave a 7, not a perfect display by any means, but while his passing was occasionally off, he also started to move that led to Fulham's second goal and put in some dangerous crosses when he drifted wide. Scott Parker, he gave a 6, now 35. The former England midfielder struggles to impose himself on games these days, and this was another quiet one as he battles back to match fitness. Tom Kearney, he gave a 6-2, less effective shut it out wide on the left, and couldn't escape the clutches of the excellent Nico Yanaris, replaced by Matt Smith late on. Moussa Dembele, he gave an 8-2, occasionally quiet, but then had his moments when he burst into life, most notably when a superbly taken goal as he eased away from James Tarkowski. The finish alone sums up why he has drawn admiring glances from the Premier League. Yeah, we know that. Okay, thank you for sharing that. Yeah. Ross McCormack gets an 8, involved in both of the goals, as his cross was turned into his own net by Tarkowski for the first before he had the ball into Dembele for the second. Had a couple of efforts himself, and while his overall contribution was sporadic, he looked dangerous when involved. Okay, those are the ratings from Andrew Rayburn from West London Sport. All right, Giannis, have at it.
I've got a few disagreements. I think my man of the match probably go to Lonergan, because Lonergan made some fantastic saves yesterday, and but for him, I don't think we're in the game. Stearman, I thought I had a good game. That I had to laugh at that run. Poor fella. He looked like he was seeing blood when he entered into the half, but he followed his run. To be fair to him, I think it got to a point where he just said he'd had enough. But interestingly enough, when I look at that run, I think of, man, this is where we miss someone like Tunnicliffe. You know, yeah. We're not the most mobile in the centre of the park, and he's decided he's going to make this run and see what happens. Garbutt had a good game. And I've always liked Garbutt. I only think he's going to last a season, for sure. But he made very few mistakes. Kearney is in the wrong position. He should be playing in the middle. I don't think there's any question about that. Dembele and McCormack certainly worked well together. And that second goal was symptomatic of the sort of synergy that the two of them have. I mean, overall, you've got to say it was a pretty tidy performance. The two goals were a little bit daft. But again, we did get the point, which was good. And we could have got the 3, but we did get the point. And the beauty of playing in the Championship is that if you have a performance that's a little bit subpar, you get a result that maybe you don't think you should have got. You've got 2-3 days and then you're back at it again. And Ipswich Town is going to be a good challenge. They're going to bring a lot of fans down from Suffolk. It'll be a good game. I think it'll be a very good game. I think we match up well with them. But I think the ratings are very, very fair. I'd have given Jazz Richards a 5. That's about it. And I probably would have given Lonergan a 9. I thought he was sensational. But apart from that, I think the ratings are pretty consistent.
Okay, very good. And I did have one person that I actually put out a tweet very late for fans to share who they would have as their man of the match. And Robert Land actually was the only one to respond. So thank you, Robert, for responding. I barely did it about an hour ago, so I wasn't expecting too many. but he actually responded as Andy Largan, just like you, Giannis. And I'm going to go along with that as well. I think he's definitely the man of the match. Before we move on from the reigns, I do want to ask you again about a player, Tim Ream, because, again, I've been going back and forth on this since he came to us. I remember when he was with with Bolton, he played left back. He plays left back for the U.S. men's national team, but he came up as a center back. So I'm going to ask you, what's his best position? And I want to say, because I want to be honest, I know he's an American, but I can rip American players. That was a horrible pass he made. You know, like in Fulham, we're fortunate that they didn't score there. But is he best suited as a center back or as a left back, just in general?
I think in a 3-4-3 formation, I'd definitely put him as the left back. In a 4-4-2, I wouldn't have him in the 11. So it's a little bit of an odd one. I think.
Is he one of these decisions that you're talking about that you think Bray needs to make?
Yeah, but I think the bigger question will be in terms of the formation. I think Ream playing will depend on the formation. One player that's got forgotten in all this, and I know there's a lot of fans there and out there that are naysayers, but that's Dan Byrne. If you're playing a 4-4-2, yep, the ability to put Dan Byrne in the middle with Stearman and stick Garbutt out on the left-hand side, I think, can work. But if you're playing 3-4-3, I think Ream at left back is perfectly fine. I really do. And I do like the 3-4-3. I just don't like the point. I don't see the point of just being negative. The 3-4-3 on the whole for us this year has done pretty well. So if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I'm hoping Tuesday night against Ipswich, who are a dangerous team on the break, we still play the 3-4-3, put Ream in comfortable positions. Again, it goes back to the putting players in their best positions. Kearney playing out wide wastes his talent. He's going to give you more mobility than Parker, and it gives Parker the option to look 60, 75 minutes of the game from the bench and maybe make an impact. It allows players like Kaká to come into the lineup, perhaps. It allows Fredericks to do the overlapping runs as the fullback. So I think this is something else that Stuart Gray is going to have to take a little bit of time in terms of assessing the right formation. And for Tim Ream, he being selected or not will be very much dependent on Coach Gray's assessment of the sort of formation that we actually need. And with a back four, I don't think he should be there. But with a back three, you can stick him at left back and he can be effective. So remains to be seen how he's going to play up.
Okay, very good. And that's why I want to bring it up to you, Giannis, because I am all about this formation. Mike mentioned it to me months ago. He's like, this is the formation that three at the back would be what would really work for us. And Tim Ream, because again, I've had fans that say to me, well, he's not good in the air, and he's not great in the air. I'll be the first to admit that. And I think maybe it's a position thing. Again, in the proper formation, I think he would thrive. I think he could do a job at left back, but I would prefer to see him as that left side of that back three. That to me, I think he would really thrive. And I'm glad that you brought up Dan Byrne. I'm going to throw up another name, Giannis. I thought Sean Hutchinson played very well in the middle of that three when he had a chance too. So yes, again, I want Stuart Gray to look at all of these center backs and assess them where they all can fit, because I think Sean Hutchinson deserves another chance too, Giannis.
I agree, and you've got players like Jake Grimmer that are coming out off injury as well.
Jack Grimmer's coming back
I think if back to Hutchinson, the only problem with Hutchinson is how do you take Stearman out of the lineup? Stearman has become such a cog in this team, and you can one of the things that will stick out for me is his reaction to that second goal we conceded. That's a player that gives a damn. And that to me has stuck out because he was clearly upset. And I think that's a good thing. We want players that care. And clearly he does. Gray's going to have to really try and he's going to have to figure this out. And the question is going to become, is he going to pick a formation that's suited to the way he wants to coach? Is he going to pick a formation that's suited to the way the players should play based on their strengths? The 3-4-3 seemed to work, but is he going to be an advocate of that? That remains to be seen. Tuesday night may tell us something, because he has the option of playing the 3-4-3. If he doesn't, then I think you'll find we may not see the 3-4-3 for a while. Maybe it's something he's not particularly comfortable with, although I think it's one that can work. because it floods the midfield, and having three strikers has to keep the defenders honest, especially the fullbacks. So I'm hoping he goes back to that, but I'm not sure. I think the one thing he can do as a coach is saying, now look, it doesn't matter whether it's Brighton or Hull or Ipswich or Wolves or whoever comes in, we don't necessarily have to respect them. Let's just go out and play our game. Let them worry about what we do as opposed to what they do. Let's get the simple things worked out and see if we can get points. We have enough talent. I mean, things could be worse, Russ. Hull City beat Bolton 1-0 yesterday. And I had to have a good laugh because I think it was Sammy Amiobi was playing for Bolton, and he was subbed with about 25 minutes to go by Emil Heskey. They're bottom of the division and they've got 12 points, and they're a mess. So when you think of how bad we are, and you've got the octogenarian Heskey has to come off a bench, then you know that things are bad. So you know what? Things could be a lot worse for us. So I'll take the fact that we're, 16th, 17th. And let's see if we can get something on Tuesday and start to move up the table.
No, listen, I hear you, Giannis. And I keep going back to this because I think that we have the team. I just don't think that I think they're underachieving, just in general. But two, I think if things are tweaked, if we can put these players in the best positions to succeed, I think we're going to start getting the results. And if they work on their issues and fix their issues, there's no reason why. I look at Brighton. How much better are Brighton than Fulham? Again, they were at the bottom of the table with us last year, and now look at Brighton. You have to give them credit. You have to give Chris Hughton credit. So maybe we need the right guy to put these players in the best position to succeed, and then maybe we'll start seeing the results. But it does start with the players. But the last thing I do want to mention real quick, and I'm glad that I can mention this before we go, because this goes back to me thinking about leaders. And for me, the biggest leader on that pitch right now, and be curious your thoughts, is Richard Stearman. Go back to what you said. You were talking about after they gave up that goal, the way that he reacted. Richard Stearman, to me, is quickly becoming my favorite Fulham player because he plays with heart, he plays with determination, and he happens to be a very good player. He's a leader back there. And I just real quick, we only have 2 minutes left. What are your thoughts? Do you agree with me on Stearman being a true leader back there?
Absolutely. Shades of Roger Brown. And that's the biggest compliment I can pay him. Roger Brown was one of our all-time great centre-backs. Fans out there that remember his contributions in the early 80s. Phenomenal centre-back. Loved him. May he rest in peace. And Stearman is a throwback to that. And we've always managed to gravitate to those players that gave it 110% every game. I mean, you mentioned someone like Gordon Davis, over the engine. I mean, he's still absolutely revered because game in, game out, he gave it everything he had. And Stearman is like that. He is a fan favorite, and for good reason. No wonder Wolves fans were pissed off when he left.
No, listen, it makes sense because that guy is committed 150% every time he goes out on that pitch. And I love players like that.
Yeah,
sure. I could deal with 11 Richard Stearmans. I know, again, it might not be the most skillful team in the world, but honestly, put that commitment into every one of our players, and we're going to go up to the table quickly because he has it, man, and I love watching him play. I just love the fight in that guy. So, again, I wanted to end the show and mention that. All right,
sure.
Giannis, let's wrap up the show. Thank you so much for doing this with me. You were fantastic today. We only have about 40 seconds left. I can't thank you enough for doing this with me, my friend.
Always an absolute pleasure to do it with you. And actually, I think this is the first time we've ever done a show together alone. It's been absolutely wonderful.
It really has. I've thoroughly enjoyed this. And listen, I know you're going to be up on several shows coming up, so I look forward to doing it with you again, my friend.
It's always a pleasure, mate. You take it easy and start praying for the snow gods to stay away.
Absolutely. All right, Giannis. For Giannis Giannis, I'm Russ Coleman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk Extra Time. Cheers, my friend.
See you, Russ. Bye, matey. Bye.
Boys and girls, London calling, now don't